Welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn, and policy expert Mandy Kimball. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Mandy?
Thank you so much,
Dawn. Hello. Yeah. Happy Monday.
Yeah. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Very good. Did you have a good weekend?
I had a fantastic weekend. The weather was beautiful.
It was nice, right? We went out to dinner on Friday night, and we were able to sit outside the whole time. It was just wonderful.
It's nice.
Up in the heights, you know, up in the really nice.
We did gardening. Swam. The kids swam. I did not swim. It's too cold still.
It was too cold for swimming.
I mean, I think so.
But the boys.
They don't. Yeah,
they love it, like, right? They're just like in it, diving away.
I have to tell you, it's exciting times when the pool's open because they eat and sleep well.
Oh, yeah, because they get all... Do you remember when your kid... We used to have a community pool when I was... I was in high school. We'd go... But, you know, growing up in Puerto Rico, we'd go to the beach all the time. But those days, we'd cycle to the beach... And we'd swim, and then we're tired all day, right? Yeah. And that's what moms want from their little boys. Just tire them out.
You want them to be healthy. They exercise. It's great.
Yeah. Hey, did you watch any of that March for Our Lives?
I did. Wasn't it awesome?
Yeah. It was really fantastic. I loved how, CNN and MSNBC gave it sort of full coverage, right? It was really, really nice.
And that they should.
Yeah.
But thank you.
Yeah, all those. So some of the Children at Risk staff were out marching as well.
That was true. We had a great turnout.
Shay was on the stage with the mayor here in Houston, so that was nice, yeah. But how proud are you of those high school kids, right?
Very proud.
Yeah. Dr. Bikini's in the studio with us today. Dr. Bikini, did you watch some of that?
I sure did. It was so inspiring.
Did it remind you of, like, your days when you were in high school? Because you were, like, a little activist, right?
Well, we did actually do some protests, but in a much more mild, small scale. This was just amazing to see these kids organize and just to have something so wonderful come across the country like that.
When you were like a little activist in Louisiana, did you mostly get booed because in Louisiana they didn't really want any activism?
No, we had people who were very supportive.
Yeah, very
supportive. Yes.
Your dad was super supportive.
That's true.
Right?
Very,
He's very supportive of you. So, Mandy, your dad is like... Gung-ho. Your dad's probably listening right now thinking...
Yeah, he's the best dad ever. What are you saying about him?
No, I'm saying
and
that
my mom.
He's listening and your mom is listening and they're thinking, I don't know why Dr. Bob is talking. Mandy is the star of this show.
Oh, please. No. They know how it goes. They're very much aware.
It's co-stars.
That's right.
Very good. Hey, it's a good show today, don't you think?
Yes.
It should be good. Hey, we're going to start off today's show with... from Children at Risk, Senior Policy Analyst and Director of the Center for Child Research Policy... Child Health Research and Policy. Jenny Iyer is going to be out. The number today, Mandy, 30.7.
30.7?
What do you think that is?
Stay tuned and we'll find out.
Your age, 30.7.
It's your age.
My age?
And your dreams. And after Data Head, we'll be talking to Shay Everett, Associate Director of Early Education and Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation. And she's going to be talking about the new opportunities for child care in Texas.
Big new
and
funding,
really
right?
Across the
There's some new funding
United
across
States.
The United States. Yes. But Texas is going to get, it's about time, right? I mean, we are so underfunded in the area of child care that... basically, we're able to push this through with the federal budget, right?
I mean, what is needed is access to quality early education, quality child care for working families,
It's the best bang for your buck if we want children to grow up right.
That's true.
Yeah, focus on that early education. Let's see. Then up next, we're going to talk to Marilyn Lee. She's the executive director of Loving Houston. She's one of our great friends. Marilyn will be talking to us about the upcoming workshops in the community. And the role, this is a very interesting thing, Mandy. They're like these school-church partnerships, right? So if a church wants to get involved in the public school system, sort of helping with tutoring and reading, and they did a lot of this with Hurricane Harvey. You saw a lot of churches volunteer in the public sector, work to help schools get back on their feet again.
That's true.
Loving
Houston is doing a lot of great things for the greater Houston community.
They've been doing
most
good
definitely.
Work for a while.
Mm-hmm. And today on our social conscience scale, we want you to call in and share your opinion, thumbs up or thumbs down segment. And today we'll be talking about, are e-cigarettes healthier than smoking regular cigarettes? That's the question.
And why are you thumbs up on this? I don't understand that, because I would think everyone would be thumbs down on e-cigarettes. I don't understand.
Everyone is thumbs down on this, and particularly with kids, right? There's a lot of conversations.
And then this is like the pièce de résistance. Right here in the studio, we have, how'd you like that? That's a good French accent, isn't it? Right here in the studio, we have le docteur de, okay, I'm going to
stop. What are you doing?
It's the doctors. We have the doctors. And Dr. Bikini is secretly laughing out loud at me. Secretly, right? Just sort of silently.
Very secretly. No, it's good.
But we have all the doctors, right? We have a studio full of pediatricians. So it's the doctors' roundtable, led by our own Dr. Bikini. In the studio with us are Dr. Lindsay Kanaik and Dr. Deanna Carrasco. And we're excited to have Dr. Deanna and Dr. Lindsay here. So that we're going to talk a little bit about e-cigarettes with them as well. So they're going to be part of our Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down, and then we'll go into the research.
End segment. Yes, so we're going to have a great show.
We do opinion followed by research.
Yes.
Don't you think? Yeah, so it's good. We can't let science go.
Such is life.
Yeah, that's usually how it works, right? Except some people can't get past opinion. They just want to stick with their opinion.
You got to go to the facts, people.
Yeah, we got to go to the facts. So sounds like a great show, huh, Mandy?
It's going to be wonderful.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Let's do it.
And it's I want to also thank everyone who pledged in the last 3 weeks, right? Because a lot of people pledged. Some people pledged after the fact. And they said, hey, I want my money to go towards growing up in America. But what we're all about is supporting community radio and supporting the great station and the network of stations on Pacifica Radio that help to do great shows like Growing Up in America, Mandy.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, welcome to Growing Up in America here on Pacifica Radio. This is a discussion on our children, public policy, and our future. How do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of every single one of our children, Mandy?
Mm-hmm.
How do we do as a nation, Mandy? How
we
are we
could
doing?
Do better.
Couldn't we, though?
But there are people trying.
Yeah, we're trying. We're trying every day. Dr. Bikini, I know you were a young activist, and you continue to be an activist even as a physician. When you see those kids marching, and, you know, we deal with the reality, right? I mean, you're with us a lot of times at the state legislative level. The reality is sometimes we think, oh, man, is anything going to change? Doesn't that give you hope, though, to see all those kids?
Oh, yeah. No, I am very inspired and very motivated to get back to work. And, well, I mean, we're always working on legislative advocacy, but it makes me feel a lot of hope that we'll be able to really move the dial on this position, on this topic, which has been something that's been hard for many, many years.
Yeah. I hope that it helps us move the needle on a bunch of stuff, right? I mean, because here kids are finally speaking out, and high school kids, and they're going to vote. A lot of them are going to vote. There was that one point during the march when they said, who's voting next year? And, you know, I think kids even who weren't going to vote.
Right,
yelling,
exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to vote.
You know, related to that, today there's a Senate education hearing going on in Austin, and it's looking at school discipline policies, which is a little bit different, but very similar. And I think a lot of the focus of people who are going to testify is to increase access to mental health services to folks. So.
Yeah, that's good.
Which is a great topic. That's really needed.
I was supposed to be there, but I said, no, I want to do my radio show with Mandy. So it was nice that they let me submit written testimony, Mandy.
That's not the message I gave them.
Oh.
I'm just, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's true. I was busy today. I had that important meeting. So, no, it was good. Yeah, it was good. So, hey, you ready to talk with Jenny? So here's our poet in motion, Jenny Iyer. She is director of the Center for Child Health Research and Policy. She's up in our Dallas office. Jenny, how is the weather in Dallas today?
Oh, it is marvelous. Not too hot yet. And not too cold, so pretty good, nice and sunny.
I know in Dallas you guys care a lot about your hair, so is the weather appropriate for your hair in Dallas?
It is. For my hair, it's totally appropriate. It's a good hair day today in Dallas, Texas.
you're sort of like a little hippie girl in terms of your hair, right? You're sort of like...
I know. It's kind of long these days.
Yeah.
So, about to chop it off, though. So.
No. I was about to ask, what is hippie hair?
You know, sort of like free-flowing, just like you don't have to worry about putting it up and teasing it and sort of...
Mm.
I don't know, Mandy. I was just making it up.
I don't think you have hippie hair. I think
we're coining the phrase hippie hair.
Yeah. Dr. Bikini, did you know what I was talking about?
I had no idea.
No idea.
Jenny always looks lovely. Her hair always looks nice.
Yeah.
So.
See, Jenny, no one allows me to pick on you at all, right?
So. Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. I mean, I always say, you got to be ready to answer any question.
That's right.
I was ready for the hippie hair question.
You're
today.
Always ready. Hey, I know you're our data head today. What's the big number, Jenny?
The big number is 30.7.
30.7.
Give it to us.
Give it to us,
Jenny. All right. It is 30.7% of e-cigarette users started smoking within 6 months, compared to only 8.1% of non-e-cigarette users.
Wow.
Smoking cigarettes?
Smoking cigarettes after starting e-cigarettes.
So as opposed to if you didn't do e-cigarettes, only about 8% of kids started smoking. But kids who were exposed to e-cigarettes, 30% of them started smoking regular cigarettes.
Exactly.
So it's like a gateway to tobacco, huh?
Basically, that's what we're finding.
I know that we're going to be going around the state with sort of talking about e-cigarettes. There are a lot of, and we have the docs here today, the physicians, pediatricians are here in the studio to talk about e-cigarettes. But when we look across the state at e-cigarettes, people have, there are a lot of myths, a lot of misconceptions around e-cigarettes, aren't there, Jenny?
Yeah, absolutely. There are. I was reading so many articles just today about the myths about how, you know, there's no nicotine in any e-cigarettes and, you know, ranging from absolutely nothing to, you know, just random facts that I guess maybe teens are making up to tell their parents that it's okay to use e-cigarettes. But it's quite scary, all of the myths that are out there, because while the research is still very new and the e-cigarettes are still fairly recent to kind of come into our culture, we don't find, you know, we're not finding a lot of good things about them.
Well, your data point today is significant.
Yeah,
so
right?
When you say 30.7% of children who were using an e-cigarette then started smoking cigarettes 6 months later, and correct me if I'm wrong, but e-cigarettes initially came out to do the reverse, correct?
I think that was one kind of avenue for their use, was to help those heavy smokers find a way to reduce their smoking.
And what we're finding out, I know in Austin we've had several conversations because tobacco is heavily regulated, but the policies haven't really caught up, you know.
That's right,
to the e-cigarettes.
That's
so
exactly right.
If one, which I think legislation was passed, but there wasn't even an age limit for a long time, and now
right.
it is 18, so
yep,
they
so
put
exactly
that.
Right. Yep.
And then, you know, Texas is very proud of sin taxes, really,
mm-hmm.
on alcohol, tobacco.
Right.
But
is there a tax on e-cigarette?
No.
Oh, there isn't.
Not right
yeah.
now.
There's
not
even
on,
a cigarette tax.
Not on the juice. Huh?
There's no cigarette tax on e-cigarettes. Is there no cigarette tax of any sort on e-cigarettes? There's
right.
no tax on
e-cigarettes.
There's no tax, right.
On,
wow.
on, like, the juice part of it, apparently.
Right.
So that's something I know that advocates are
yeah,
exploring.
There was a really nice bill that passed in 2015 session that actually reduced the ability for kids to come in contact with e-cigarettes, kids like younger than 18. But still a lot of work to be done
yeah.
around e-cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. Jenny, I know we've talked to Steve Kelder, who's sort of the national expert on e-cigarettes. And he's talked about this thing called Juuls, right, that look like they look like little flash drives.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids are smoking with them. Super high content of nicotine. Do you know much about those?
I do. And really from what he's talked about, I've listened to several of his lectures, but, I mean, they have more nicotine than cigarettes do.
Right.
And but some people put them in the same classification as other e-cigarettes that don't have as much nicotine. And they're not all created equal by any means.
Hey, Jenny, before we go, I know that you're an expert on school breakfast. And so I wanted to ask you, when you look across the state and you look this year in terms of participation, are more kids having school breakfast at school these days, or is it sort of flattened out?
You know, I think from what my partners across the state have said, that we are seeing an increase in school breakfast consumption.
Yeah.
I think that with everything, you're always going to have a little plateau here and there, but schools are trying to bring some very innovative foods and innovative methods to make it fun and enjoyable to eat breakfast. So
very
I hope
good.
That number keeps increasing.
Absolutely.
And we're going to keep focusing on school breakfast because it is something that combats hunger. But with summer right around the corner, we're shifting our conversation to summer food access.
Summer food.
That's
right. What I need to
yes.
be talking about, right? Okay. Summer food.
I think so.
Very good. Jenny Iyer is Big Cheese up in the North Texas office. Thank you, Jenny, for all that you do for children, and thank you for being on Growing Up in America today.
Of course. I look forward to listening to the rest of the program.
All
Have
right.
a good day.
All
bye.
Right,
take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT, Houston, Pacifica Radio, along with Mandy. Mandy, you doing well?
I'm doing fantastic. Great to be here with you, Bob.
Yeah, it's always good to hear Jenny, though, isn't mm-hmm. she? She's very good. Hey, you ready to talk to another expert on children? So we have Absolutely. Shay Everett. Right?
When I think of Shay Everett, I think of the Beach Boys.
Wouldn't it be nice? Yeah, because Shay is sort of a beachy sort of person, right?
So I thought it was because I was so young, and wouldn't it be nice if I were older?
Yeah, something. Well, you are pretty young, Shay. You have to get now. Shay, we were talking earlier. You were at the march in Houston, right? At the March for Our Lives. How was that, Shay?
It was wonderful and inspiring, and the turnout was great, and the students were just. I was so impressed by the students, how organized they were, how focused they were, the comments that were made. There was even one of the speakers was a fifth grade boy from Humble ISD, and whose story has gone viral. And it was just his speech was, you know, really brought a lot in the crowd.
And you're up on the stage with the mayor. The mayor did a pretty good job, I thought, as well.
He did, and he announced a Houston City Commission to end gun violence, which mm-hmm. I think is a very, very great next step.
Yeah. Thank you, Mayor Turner.
Yeah, very good. So today, Shay, you're here to talk a little bit about this. We see the federal government. It's almost a miraculous thing. The federal government has decided that we need to send more money to Texas and really all over the nation around subsidized child care and making high-quality child care a priority. How is that going to manifest itself in Texas, Shay?
So in Texas right now, we have about 100,000 children on average each day in the government-subsidized child care system, and this is for low-income working families. And that actually comes out to over 1 million individual children each year. And this makes up half of the Texas Workforce Commission's budget at about $500 million. But with this new unprecedented increase in the 3 decades since this whole program was funded federally, we will increase our state budget for this by 50%. So we'll go up to around $800 million a year. So that's almost $1 billion.
It's a lot.
It is, and it's exciting.
$1 billion is a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we talked about this a little bit earlier as well. We know that low-income working families need a safe place for their children to be while they're at work. And then the conversation transitioned into quality. So, Shay, can you talk a little bit more about what are some of the possibilities or realities that we can use this money for to help families?
Yeah, so right now, one of the big things is increasing the amount that these child care providers are paid for taking care of these children. And we want these children to be in high-quality environments, mostly because they're at risk already. They are children of low-income families by nature, and so that already puts them far behind their peers, and you know, many research shows that they have a harder time catching up and being school-ready and have worse outcomes by and large, you know, even whether it's around teen pregnancy or high school dropouts. And so we really want to make sure that these programs are quality. And one way to do that, quality is expensive, and so we have to be reimbursing these child care providers at what it actually costs to be quality, not just at whatever the state can afford, which is where we're at now, which is about, you know, 15 to 30% of the rate that a private pay parent.
And Shay, when we talk about quality for early education, for child care, it's really not just about paying these people more, but it's about training and professional development and really understanding that when a child is dropped off at one of these child care centers, there's going to be a sort of a richer experience, a more academic experience. A lot of more learning is going to happen, right?
Absolutely, and it's that learning component, and it's also a supportive, nurturing environment. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest indicators of quality is the teacher and child interaction. Even from infancy, is when you're feeding that child out of a bottle, are you talking to them reassuringly and giving them time, adequate time to finish their meal? I mean, it can be, that's just one small example of what that looks like.
I think what's amazing, though, right, is that when we spend money on early education, what we know is that when we do this and we get this extra money and we put it into quality, we're going to see direct payoff, right? There are going to be more children that are kindergarten ready, and more kids that are going to be reading at higher than third grade level because they had quality early education. The research is pretty clear on this.
Absolutely, and I think that, you know, the child care component is not a silver bullet, and so you really need that strong pre-K, kindergarten through third grade. But if you get them there, if we can get them into the public school system school ready, that makes it an easier job for the school district to then pick up and get them to, you know, meeting those benchmarks as they progress.
And we can do it, and we will do it. And Shay brings up a good point with that. We need to stop talking about early education and silos. It has to do with parent education, mm-hmm. right? And parent-child interactions. It has to do with the environment and education that they're getting in that whole continuum to third grade. And Texas is prime for this opportunity and for this quest. And today we had several stakeholders and leaders around early education.
It's a big statewide meeting at Children at Risk today.
Talking about what are we going to do. So it was great.
Really did you guys decide on something? I mean, is there...
We did.
What'd you decide on?
We've solved all the world's
You've
problems.
You've got it.
You know
it
when you put
on.
Us in a room.
When you have Mandy and Shay in a room, it's like bar the door, right?
Yeah. We reimbursement rates are one thing that we all agreed around. And another component is, you know, that early childhood workforce, making sure that they have the training and the credentials they need and fair compensation, because right now they get paid minimum wage jobs. I mean, you could go work at a grocery store and get paid more money than the people that are caring for our children, and that's a problem. Yeah.
What is the figure, Shay, in terms of how many hours does it take for you to become a cosmetician or to work on nails, as opposed to how many hours does it take for you to be certified to do early education?
So to be a child care teacher in a classroom in Texas, all you need is a high school diploma and 8 hours of training.
8 hours.
But to be a nail technician at a nail salon or a barber even, you need, you know, upwards of 1,300 hours of training, and you have to pass a licensing exam.
Wow.
There you go.
That's amazing,
so
isn't it?
So basically, people who are cutting your hair need more training.
Well, I want people who are cutting my hair to have more training.
Child.
I do
and
like that, but I want more. I want more hours though for people who are going to take care of my kids. Right?
Thanks.
More mm-hmm. than people who are cutting my hair.
That's right.
So as much as I love the people who cut my hair, I'd hate to say something and then my next haircut is like, hey, this bald spot is bigger than it was when I came in. Right?
Well, they can't always hope that.
Shay, I know you're nice to me. You know, I think
you brought it up.
Mandy,
I think
not...
the bald spot's getting smaller, Bob.
Yeah, see, look at that. See, Shay. Well, there is no bald spot, so I don't know why we're talking about this. So that was too loud, Shay. That was too loud. Come on, you guys. You guys are.
You're asking for it. Move on.
Yeah. Shay, what is it that we need to expect? Final question. What is it that we need to expect in terms of when we're going to start to see higher quality early education, for subsidized early education for some of our low-income families in Texas?
I really hope we've seen over the last 2 years a steady increase from about 13% of eligible providers in a quality rating program to now 17%. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but we're slowly getting there. And we think that with this momentum, we'll be able to get that up to be a lot higher. Other states like ours are at 50% or more. And so we do have a ways to go. But I'm very hopeful with this influx of new funds, with the great leadership we have at the Texas Workforce Commission, and with all these advocates at the table, that over the next few years, we can see some movement in the needle.
Shay Everett. Shay is the Associate Director of Early Education at the Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation at Children at Risk. Shay, thank you so much for your work with children, and thanks so much for being on Growing Up in America today.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Talk to you
Take
later.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. And you ready to talk a little bit of church-school relations? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Loving Houston.
I don't know why that's her theme song. Do you have any idea? It's a good little song, though, don't you think? Yeah, yeah.
They're stuck with these people.
Marilyn Lee is with us. Marilyn is executive director of Loving Houston, one of the great organizations in Houston, putting churches together to help schools be more successful. Marilyn, how are you doing today?
Good. How are y'all doing?
Great. Happy Monday.
Thank you. Happy Monday to y'all, too.
Yeah. Hey, Marilyn, when you think about the impact of Hurricane Harvey, and we saw churches all across Houston sort of do whatever it took, really, to make sure that children and families could pull themselves out of the devastation of Harvey. But that work continues today with a lot of these churches represented by Loving Houston.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that one of the coolest things when Hurricane Harvey first hit, we were trying to figure out, okay, what are ways that churches can help out? And the cool thing that we saw is that because churches had these personal relationships with these schools already, they were able to go directly to the school and do some work directly with families who were affected, like immediately after, because those relationships had already been built. And so even now, there is a new group that has started called Houston Responds. That's really organizing church networks in different regions across Greater Houston to care for the communities and the families that have been affected. So if anyone's interested in finding out more about that, the website is HoustonResponds.org, and Tommy Rawson is the executive director heading that initiative up.
Marilyn, can you talk a little bit about what these partnerships look like and potentially, well, really, what they did look like, and have the partnerships changed as we're approaching a year since Hurricane Harvey? It's not necessarily the recovery isn't always on the news right now, right? So what is it that families are looking for right now?
Yeah, good question. I think at the very beginning, I mean, it was just very much relief work. Right now, it seems like what's happening is more of the rebuilding. So a lot of casework with the individual families, still a lot of physical rebuilding of houses. That's a lot of the stuff that's going on. I will say with Loving Houston, a lot of the churches that we're working with are kind of responding to more indirect effects of Harvey. So different things like bringing in mentors or mental health resources, or
that's one question that I had, because particularly you have the physical rebuilding, but then post-traumatic stress, right? Which would they say 9 to 18 months before it really hits in and families are like, okay, I've been going, and now I really need some help. And so mentoring companionship is something I'm sure that y'all are focusing on.
But you guys are actively looking for more churches to become involved, Marilyn. Is that right? Did we lose Marilyn?
I heard a click.
Yeah, I heard a click, too.
I was talking. Marilyn, she didn't like what I said.
Marilyn got so upset with you, she decided to hang up. She thought, first of all, you were mean to Bob, but no one's listening in. And then I'm just going to hang up on Mandy. I think
post-traumatic stress is nine months.
Dr. Bikini, tell us about
that.
You
can actually start a little bit earlier. But it can certainly last. Certainly, we started seeing patients at even 2 to 3 months post. It typically peaks later. Sorry, I can't talk today. What they're doing is huge. What we're seeing, because we're working with kids and families all the time, I mean, there's still so much mental health need and need for mentorship as families are still trying to recover. So many kids are just getting back into their schools, and that actually has had a huge impact on their mental health and sense of community.
Kingwood just started up 2 weeks ago, right?
Last week.
Marilyn's back on the line. Marilyn, I know you got mad at Mandy and hung up on her, but I'm glad you decided to call back. I wanted to ask you, though, you're looking for churches to be a part of this, though, right? I mean, there's still not enough churches compared to the work that needs to be done, in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, HoustonResponse.org, that's the best place to go for that, specifically with Hurricane Harvey. But like we were just talking about a second ago, the mentors, it seems like that's been the key ask that we've received from schools. So just in the past 30 days, we've received requests from 38 different schools for church partners. And the main thing that they're looking for is for mentors. And I feel like probably a lot of it is what we were just talking about a second ago, just the mental and the emotional impact of what Harvey had.
I was talking to a first generation college student the other day, and we were comparing notes. Right, both of us first generation college students. Both of us in high school, we needed sort of helping hands. Right, the idea that you pull yourself up by your own bootstraps is wrong. Right, there are teachers, there are people in churches, there are uncles, people who sort of take your hand and say, "I'm going to help you get through this." And in a sense, that's what we're asking for. Right, is for people to come forward to help some of these kids in these schools.
Absolutely. And I would say not even first generation. I mean, I was just talking with my family last night. My parents went to college. They went to grad school. And I needed a tutor big time to get through math. Like, there was no way that I was going to be able to pass math if I did not have a tutor. And so for every student, I mean, there is something that an adult or a caring adult from a church can do to help, whether that's, talking with a child, listening to a child, mentoring in math, whatever it is. There's so many different opportunities to help.
Marilyn Lee, she's the executive director of Loving Houston. Marilyn, thank you so much for the work that you're doing and that everyone involved with Loving Houston is doing. We love working with you guys, and we'll see you soon.
Awesome. Thanks. And anyone is interested in coming to one of our workshops, it's lovinghouston.net/workshops. We have workshops coming up this week for Houston ISD, next week for Spring Branch, the following week for Lamar Consolidated, and then in a couple of weeks for Humble ISD. So.
And that's lovinghouston.net/workshops. Very good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Marilyn. Thanks for all the work you're doing. All right,
take care.
Thanks so much, Bob. Thanks, y'all.
You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT. This is a fine radio show, Mandy, and you make it even better, I must say.
You just do such a great job. It's fun when you can do something you enjoy.
Right? We love this whole idea.
It's easy to talk about these issues.
Child advocacy and get it out. So are you ready for a little thumbs up, thumbs down?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too. So I think this is my favorite thing in the show, right?
Yours and so many more.
Boom.
Other people's too.
Yeah. Yep. What's your favorite part of the show, by the way?
I like
making
thumbs
fun
up.
Of me. You like
that
making fun
not
of me.
True.
That's
I'm your... teasing you too much. You know you're my favorite boss.
I'm the only boss you have. So, hey, listen, thumbs up, thumbs down. Today we're talking about e-cigarettes. Are e-cigarettes, thumbs up or thumbs down, are e-cigarettes healthier than smoking regular cigarettes? Is there definitive proof on this, Mandy? Do we know?
I guess it depends what article you read as well.
No, I don't think. I think if you read any research, it's all pretty conclusive on this. Right, Dr. Bikini?
There's some articles that are from doctors or pediatricians that are saying that it is better for you, but that doesn't mean that it's good for you. Right?
Yeah, I would definitely think that neither of them are good for you.
Right,
but
we can agree on that.
Yes.
So,
but hopefully we can get some audience participation. I don't if everybody can call in. Is that the right number?
713-526-5738. I love it when guests just take over the show, Mandy. Right? 713-526-5738.
She's a host.
In the studio, Dr. Bikini's with us, but also as Dr. Lindsay, Dr. Deanna. So we have a host of three pediatricians in here, Mandy, and then two fake doctors as well. So we have three pediatricians, real doctors, that are in here to talk about this. 713-526-5738. From your perspective, Dr. Bikini, and you've seen a lot of this research, you would say don't start on e-cigarettes.
I would agree with that. Yeah, don't start e-cigarettes. Don't smoke. Both have a lot of hazards to your health. So I'm thumbs down.
Dr. Deanna, I mean, when you think about e-cigarettes, is there anything positive in it for you at all when you think about it?
I don't see any positives in it, no.
Yeah, nothing positive. Dr. Lindsay?
Definitely not.
Yeah,
no positives.
Yeah.
Thumbs down.
Thumbs down. So we have a lot of thumbs
everyone's
down.
Everyone's saying no.
Yeah. 713-526-5738. We're getting a few phone calls, though. People are going to sort of chime in on what they think about this. Thanks, Dr. Bikini, for doing the call out and getting those people to call in. Mandy, but it seems like there's a lot of false information, though, like around e-cigarettes.
Well, I think there's a lot of mixed information, right? False, yes, true.
Mixed.
But you can't, they use it and they take it as a blanket statement or a blanket fact for everyone, right? So I think what we've talked about is, they're not bad for you because there's no nicotine. Well, it depends which one you get. And it could have more than a cigarette. It could have less. It could have zero.
I agree. I think it's a big misconception that people think, oh, there's no nicotine, it's not addictive, I can use it just for fun, but that's false. You actually have to read the labels very closely, and sometimes the nicotine's actually hidden in the packages that people don't realize.
Let's take a couple of phone calls here. Let's start with Heather. Heather, you're on the line. How are you doing, Heather?
I am doing quite well, enjoying the program.
Very good. So, Heather, thumbs up, thumbs down. What are your thoughts on e-cigarettes?
Man, it's a thumbs down.
Yeah.
It gives a real false sense of security in the first place. And then you just came out with data that shows that the kids who engage in this sort of activity go on to, at a much higher rate, to use cigarettes. It's a no-brainer. It's a thumbs down.
So thumbs down from Heather. Do you know people who are smoking e-cigarettes?
I see them every day.
Yeah,
every
I do too. And so it's interesting because they see, you know, I live in Montrose, and so it seems like I see a lot of people on the streets with these cigarettes.
Absolutely. And I'm in the Woodlands, and it's terrible.
Same thing there. Hey, Heather, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Take care. All righty. Let's go to a couple others. We have Sally on the line. Sally, how you doing?
I'm doing just great. Thank you so much.
What are you thinking on e-cigarettes, Sally? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
100% thumbs down, 1,000,000,000% thumbs down. I think that e-cigarettes should be treated the same way as we are treating smoking tobacco.
Yeah.
That there should be absolutely no beginning, and should never give the message that it is acceptable in any form.
Sally, what gives you such, because you have strong feelings on this, why do you have such strong feelings? What's going on there?
I have a 26-year-old son.
Yeah.
Who I raised strongly against any type of tobacco or nicotine product. And the split second that he began at age 15 because of peer pressure, it just basically has ruined his life in so many ways.
Oh, wow. Wow. So you have some personal experience. Hey, Sally, thanks for calling in.
God bless you.
A lot of callers.
Yeah, we do have a lot of callers. Let's go to Dave who's on the line. Dave, how's it going?
Very good, man. How you doing?
Very good, man. So what do you got? What do you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down on these e-cigarettes?
Well, I've got a lot of experience with them, you know, because I was a lifelong smoker. I'm in my late 60s, and about 8 years ago I started when they came out. And from the day one, I quit the what they call analogs.
Yeah,
the
real
cigarettes. Yeah. And you know, I've been vaping. I'm down to zero nicotine. I can taste. I can smell.
You, it's worked out. But
you know, and a lot of these people that are calling don't have any experience. But it's a lifesaver for me.
Yeah. You know, what do you think about kids taking it up, though, Dave? You started smoking.
Yeah, no, I agree. Nobody should start on them. But
yeah.
There is a place for them. And I have friends that have totally quit tobacco as well, at least six of them. And so, I mean, there is a place, but, you know, tell them to kids, no.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Dave, thanks for calling in, man.
Thanks, man.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. All right, let's do one more caller. Gene, you're on the line. How you doing, Gene?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
What do you think about thumbs up, thumbs down to e-cigarettes?
I'm inclined to go thumbs up. Now, first of all, let me state very quickly that I have never had one.
Okay.
I have smoked a number of cigarettes. I've never luckily had the habit, but I started doing my own experimentation about which was the worst thing for you, the nicotine or the tar.
Right.
In my opinion, it's actually the tar. I developed a little pump-like thing that could pull smoke through a cigarette. I even made my own cigarettes for this purpose and made my own filters that would trap as many as, say, 20 cigarettes. I would keep using the same filter. Well, within anywhere from 15 to 20 regular tobacco cigarettes, the thing plugs up, and the only stuff that cuts it is a petroleum distillate, such as lacquer thinner or gasoline. Water will not cut it. Soap won't do anything. So
e-cigarettes, I mean, indeed, there's no tar in these cigarettes. But for kids, that nicotine could still be a deal, I guess, huh?
I think, well, certainly nicotine probably isn't good for you.
Yeah,
you know? And for a kid to get started on it, I would say, yeah, that's not a good thing. But I am glad to hear, because this is the first time I've ever heard anything on this topic, that some people are at least having some success by smoking them instead of cigarettes.
All right. Hey, Gene, thanks for calling in, man.
Okay, thank you.
All righty, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, so let's get into our topic, though, right? Because we have our pediatricians here, Dr. Lindsay. First off, when we said we're going to have you on as have a bunch of pediatricians on, what made you guys think, oh, let's talk about e-cigarettes?
Well, as the doctor in my family, people have asked me the same thing. You know, my family members saying, hey, I'm going to quit smoking. Should I start e-cigarettes? You know, what's the deal about this?
Yeah.
So I think it's an interesting topic for doctors because for a long time, a lot wasn't even known. You know, it wasn't taught in medical schools. We didn't really know much about it. And then even in my travels, looking at how far we've come in cigarettes, and I was recently in India, and they actually had cigarette packets with, like, pictures of cancer and lungs, bad lungs on it. But now with e-cigarettes, you know, they're fruit. They're sexy. It's just very different how they're marketed, especially to kids.
Wow. Dr. Deanna, from your perspective, I mean, what made you sort of really interested in this e-cigarette topic?
Well, we're pediatricians, and this is a really important topic for pediatricians because there's a large number of children who are on e-cigarettes. And that number is, you know, there was a study done in 2015, and it found that about 27.1% of U.S. adolescents had ever tried an e-cigarette. And they've also looked at what that translates to in actual numbers, and that's about 3 million teens. So it's a very important public health topic for us. And then we know also that a lot of those children go on to actually become smokers and not just e-cigarettes, but other types of inhalants.
30%. I mean, that was the big thing, right? The 30%. Dr. Bikini.
It's really remarkable to me in talking to my patients is that most kids don't understand the harms or the dangers associated with e-cigarettes.
Yeah.
There have been all these surveys of adolescents, and they think that e-cigarettes are fine. They're harmless. They're not going to increase the risk of smoking and any long-term health issues. And so that's something that makes us very passionate about talking about this issue more.
Dr. Lindsay, when you get heavy doses of nicotine in e-cigarettes, what does that do to a child? So if I'm 15, 16 years old and I'm smoking, one of those Juuls that have lot of nicotine in there, more than a cigarette, what does that do to my body?
Well, you know, just kind of like large doses of caffeine, right? You can get really amped up, you know, and we know, especially when kids are younger, they're just at risk of being addicted, you know, more quickly. I mean, we say, look at kids on their cell phones that can have addictive personalities really fast.
Right.
So getting those large doses is not only bad for teenagers, but we've also have risks of overdoses in little kids who find these liquids that are, you know, fruity and they
it's
might
like
drink
bubble
it.
Gum, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right. So actually, I think there was a number that about 400 kids in the past couple of months have shown up in the ER actually with overdoses and you know their heart rate.
How many kids?
I think about 400
in the United States.
485 exposures. And you know what e-cigarettes are, they're battery powered devices that have a liquid inside that contains nicotine and other harmful chemicals, and it heats up that liquid to make it into a vapor, and that's what children are inhaling. But that liquid is very concentrated nicotine, and so there have also been cases of poisoning with it. And children can show up with seizures, and it can also have cardiac side effects. So it's very dangerous.
Are schools and like prevention programs keeping up with e-cigarettes, to y'all's knowledge, or for pediatricians, right? So if you're talking, I assume that you talk to the children, smoking is bad, drinking is bad, that includes e-cigarettes, right? Do you have any partners outside of the pediatrician office?
Well, honestly, I think a lot of pediatricians, myself included, have been a little slow on bringing that up, right? Because we ask our kids all the time, you know, alcohol, drugs, cigarettes. But like we've mentioned, kids don't think of e-cigarettes as cigarettes. They think of it as vaping, you know. So unless you use those specific words, are you vaping? I think a lot of it is getting missed. And then even in schools, you know, I don't think people realize what these electronic devices that kids are carrying around really are.
Yeah.
So I do worry that a lot of this is getting missed.
Well, I know. I've seen kids who are pretty adamant that they don't smoke, right? Oh, no, I don't smoke. And then if you ask, have you ever done vaping, they say, oh, I've done that a couple times. It's sort of fun. It tastes good. Mm-hmm. And that's what people aren't understanding, Dr. Bikini, right? I mean, is that this is in some ways just as bad or worse than cigarettes.
That's correct.
It, it may seem fine, but it still can be harmful to kids.
Totally agree. And I think you actually brought up a really good point when you're talking about education in the schools. I mean, when we think about additional aspects where we could use policy or programming to decrease the use of e-cigarettes, one is trying to improve education. So that's through the schools, which don't get me started on the fact that many schools don't have any health education, because I think this is part of important education for kids.
Course,
But also the way e-cigarettes are marketed in general, and also you know, the availability to purchase these things online, which sometimes teens can get around that. Yeah, I don't know if you guys want to talk about that a little bit further.
So the, you know, the companies that sell e-cigarettes are very, very smart in that they use various marketing strategies that appeal to teenagers. And some of those strategies are showing imagery in their advertisements that explore themes like being unique, being original, standing out, having fun. And teenagers by nature are attracted to those type of things. They've also used celebrity endorsements. And studies show that when a celebrity endorses a product, children think of those celebrities as trustworthy, knowledgeable people. So they're more likely to follow their suggestions. And even there was one time a few years back where Katherine Heigl, who was on Grey's Anatomy and very popular, was on the David Letterman show, and she showed up with an e-cigarette, and even David Letterman took a few puffs. And then they've even put it into there was one article on Cosmo magazine where they were talking about e-cigarettes in gift bags during Fashion Week, and then several fashion bloggers talking about, you know, the highlight of Fashion Week was getting e-cigs in their gift bags. So there's all these strategies they employ to lure children into using these devices.
It definitely sounds like it, but I want to go back to online. So in Texas, children can't go to a store. You're not supposed to, right? Go to a store. You have to. There's an age limit. Online, I assume there's still maybe an age limit, but how is that enforced, even if there is?
So Texas did just have great legislation passed to bring an age limit to e-cigarettes when before there wasn't. In 2015, they did pass that to make it 18. But, you know, our kids are so tech-savvy online. They actually did a study to see how many kids could actually purchase online. You know, 16, 17-year-olds that maybe already have our own credit cards, probably already have their own credit cards. And there was really only four companies that actually stopped them. There were, like, 34 states they were actually able to purchase online, and nothing stopped them to verify how old they actually were.
Wow.
So, you know, this could be showing up on your doorstep and you don't even realize it.
When we think about buying some of this stuff, Dr. Lindsay, how expensive are e-cigarettes for kids? I mean, is it a whole range?
I think they cost probably only like $13 to $15. There's probably a range depending on how fruity, how fancy you are, but it's definitely things that kids can afford.
So the little machine, the little vaping machine is $13 to $15. And how much of the little fruit things that you put in there? Do we know how much that is about?
I think they're a similar price.
Yeah.
Oh, really? So you just
so is it cost prohibitive, right? That was one strategy for cigarettes, was to keep increasing the price where they can't afford it. But these days, that sounds like it's more expensive than going out and buying.
But you can't underestimate how much kids will pay for cool. And if they think that this is cool, and if they think it's the new thing, they're going
to have the money, though.
But also, I think they can last longer than typical cigarettes, right? You have to buy the device, but then once you have the liquid, you know, I've never done it, so I'm not sure. But I think the puffs and how long it lasts could be longer than typical cigarettes, than just a pack.
Dr. Bikini, are you clinically, you know, in the emergency room, are we seeing a lot of cases here in Houston?
It's a good question. You guys are closer to the ER than I am, but we've certainly had cases for sure here locally in the Houston area.
What's a typical thing that would come in? Is it the overdose on the little nicotine juice? Is that the deal?
Yeah, you can absolutely see the overdose where the child's heart is going too fast. It has been linked with seizures, as Deanna was talking about. They'll come in with convulsions for the first time. It can be very scary. And then there's so many other poisonous like toxins that are included in that liquid, many of which we don't even know the full you know, health consequences of those, you know, different compounds at this point.
Before we get to our final four, Dr. Bikini, because you and Mandy and I, we spent a lot of time in the Capitol, are there policy suggestions, other things that we should be telling our state legislature to do around e-cigarettes?
I think so. And actually, I think both Deanna and Lindsay...
You guys have some...
I think...
So, Dr. Deanna, what do you have? What are some policy suggestions on this? And then Dr. Lindsay.
Yeah, so I think some of the things we were talking about, these are products that are not currently taxed, so perhaps putting a tax on those
it.
And then
yep.
using those revenues to help public health efforts. And then, there, you know, in the study that Lindsay referred to about children buying these products online, they did find a few vendors who actually asked these children to submit photo identification and found out that they were underage and did not sell the product. So there needs to be some more online regulation mm-hmm. about how they can purchase that.
And actually, even just last year, there was a bill proposed to increase the age to buy cigarettes and e-cigarettes to 21. Because if you think of 18, those are kids in high school who mm-hmm. can pass it around to their friends or buy it for their friends that are right next to them. So, you know, a few states have actually already increased e-cigarettes to 21. That includes California, New Jersey, Oregon, Hawaii, Maine. You know, that bill has come up in Texas. It hasn't passed yet, but I think that could be something that would be really exciting. San Antonio actually just recently tried to be the first city to increase.
Did that
21.
Happen?
It did happen. I think it's still, you know, being refuted and they're working out the
okay.
kinks, but
yeah, yeah.
It did pass in the city.
Because this is a
we just don't want to go
industry.
Backwards, right?
Yeah.
We were going forwards and it's just.
And I've heard many of our state representatives ask, you know, several experts in the field of cancer, and the question always is, what is one thing we can do policy wise to try to reduce the rates of cancer? And a lot of, you know, kids start smoking young and it really affects their whole quality of life with lung cancer and chronic lung disease. And without hesitation, you know, these leaders in cancer research have said increase the age of buying cigarettes and tobacco products to 21. And so I really, you know, thank Dr. Zerwas for carrying this legislation last year. There were many other people who were a part of that. And I'd really like to see that come back up in 2019 to have better discussion about it.
Mandy, before we go to the final four, is there a likelihood that some e-cigarette legislation passes this year, sort of in protecting kids?
Maybe.
Yeah, this coming year.
I mean, there could be. People are interested, and over the past few sessions, legislation has come up, and we're behind the eight ball, and people don't want to go backwards in public health, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that, and especially, I mean, taxes, although Texas doesn't like imposing new taxes, right?
Yeah, but we do sin taxes, though, right? Yeah. So, Dr. Lindsay, a final point.
Yeah, I do have one more comment. Since a lot of our call-in listeners were talking about how, you know, they've been able to successfully go from regular cigarettes to e-cigarettes, I do want to caution users that, you know, American Academy of Pediatrics is saying no e-cigarettes at all, because a new study has come out where they actually tested the saliva of these users, and they found that they were 50 to, like, 200% more common to find carcinogens in their saliva. So although they might not have the nicotine, it still definitely
it's
has
still dangerous. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
no matter
cancer causing
parents
agents.
Need to understand that e-cigarettes are dangerous and we should keep kids away from e-cigarettes. I mean, that's the bottom line. As pediatricians, you're saying this day in, day out, right?
Very just
good.
Say no.
Just say no, right? All right, you ready for a little Final Four of 54?
Yes! So this is an opportunity for us to get to know our guests a bit better. So let's start with you, Lindsay. First question is, what was your favorite toy to play with as a kid?
I didn't have a toy. I just loved being outside. I grew up on a farm in Iowa, so I enjoyed the cats, the cows, you name it. I was outside.
Did you guys have a little hog farm there as well? Because Iowa, right? Corn and hogs, right?
Well, my mom eventually decided they were too smelly, so we specialized on beef cattle.
Oh, beef cattle. Very good. Your favorite toy, Dr. Deanna?
I, like Lindsay, also grew up a large part of the time in a farm, and we had a llama, and I had this big Tonka truck that I loved, and once I tied it up to a llama and sat on it and tried to, like, get her to pull me, but it was a disaster.
You don't hear
that's
that
a good
very
story.
Often. That is a great story.
You don't hear the Tonka truck
really
pulling
to get
the child with the llama.
Pull me.
That's a good experience. Come on, Dr. Deanna. So that's good.
There you go.
Mandy, you never had that experience, did you?
I did not.
You didn't have. What was your favorite toy, Mandy?
It depends. I remember
I really liked my Cabbage Patch doll.
Oh, yeah, you like Cabbage Patch.
Yeah, but that was inside, but outside, and then I was outside playing with balls or something like that.
Dr. McKean, you had like a little stethoscope, right? That's what you
no,
like.
No, but that is your favorite joke about my childhood.
It is, isn't it?
I liked Cabbage Patch Kids and Strawberry Shortcake.
Strawberry Shortcake, every single time,
you
Dr.
do, but I love it, yeah, so yeah, it's good, okay. Yeah.
And you know what? The other pediatricians always laugh out loud when I say that.
That's
so,
true.
Yeah, that's good. Mandy, question number two.
Question number two. Dr. Deanna, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
I wanted to be a gardener.
A gardener, right?
Do you have a nice garden now?
I live in an apartment right now, so no, but
okay,
maybe
okay.
later.
Were your parents disappointed you grew up to be a physician?
No.
Okay, I'm just wondering. Dr. Lindsay?
I wanted to be a dolphin trainer.
Oh, you know, true. 2 years ago, I took a trip focused on children to Cuba, and I remember asking a bunch of kids what they wanted. And the first one said he wanted to be a dolphin trainer. That was so this is the second time I've heard that. Okay. So. Mandy, nice. What did you want to be?
When I grew up, it changed quite a bit, but I wanted to drive the ambulance.
You drive the ambulance.
Paramedic.
Dr. McKean, you wanted to be governor of Louisiana.
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, third question is, what was your favorite book to read as a child?
Dr. Lindsay?
I think Dr. Seuss's Feet, Feet, Feet. Left feet, foot, feet, right feet. Foot, feet, feet, feet.
Did you ever think about becoming a podiatrist because of
no,
that
book? Definitely no, definitely not.
Dr. Deanna, favorite book?
Probably either Pippi Longstocking or The Little Prince. I loved The Little Prince when I was growing
like
up.
A little intellectualism right there, The Little Prince, Mandy.
That's great.
Your boys like that little book? Do they know it?
No.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a little French book. French.
Saint-Antoine d'Exupéry is the author. It's great.
Okay. We'll have to check it out.
What's our next question, Mandy?
What was your favorite movie when you were a kid?
Dr. Deanna, favorite movie?
I think it was called The Witches. It was about...
Oh, Disney movie, wasn't it, with Bette Midler or something?
Yes, yes, yeah, and they turned children into mice. Yeah, I thought it was fun.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
I was more of a classic, The Lion King.
Oh, nice.
Oh, Lion King. Was that the first Disney movie you ever saw, Lindsay?
It could have been. I think I saw all of the Disney movies by the time I grew up, and they were all on, you know, VHSs. Many of the kids might not know what they are,
what?
But they still exist in my mom's house.
I hear
house.
You're supposed to save them now. They could be worth something.
No,
what was your favorite movie?
I liked The Little Mermaid and Oliver and Company. Those were some of my favorites.
I really liked The Little Mermaid and The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, Wizard of Oz. Yeah. My daughter watched that all the time. Yeah, that was a good movie. All right, so those are our final 4 of 54. Thank you, Mandy, very much. Mandy.
Thank you.
Mandy, do you love... we love doing this final 4 of 54, don't we?
I love talking about getting to know people more.
So, hey, I want to thank all the docs for being here with us, Dr. Lindsay, Dr. Deanna, and then, of course, one of our favorite pediatricians in Houston, Dr. Bikini. You always... thank you so much for coming. Every month you come here with new pediatricians.
Oh,
we
my gosh,
that.
And they're wonderful. They are. Such a lively discussion with lots of information
and
today.
These are all
I
from all from Baylor, but you know,
that's
I
correct.
Was at UT Health. I was doing grand rounds,
uh-huh.
and they came up to me and they said, could we have a group of pediatricians from UT Health join?
Oh, really?
And I said, of course.
Yeah.
Dr. Keeley Smith was
wonderful.
The, yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
You have a lot of favorite pediatricians, but I think that's wonderful because you get a lot of people involved in the community.
And I have two new favorite pediatricians, Dr. Deanna and Dr. Lindsay.
Now
right?
that you met them.
Yeah, yeah, now that I know them. Hey, Mandy and I thank all of you for your support during Pledge Drive, but also for listening to us. To us each and every week. I want to thank Don, the engineer. I want to thank Marissa. She's the Khaleesi when it comes to producing. We love having Marissa Johnson out there. She never does a bad job, does she, Mandy?
She never does. Thank you so much, Marissa.
And hug your kids. We want to take care of every child in our community. And then Mandy and I, from the bottom of our heart, we say thank you for all that you do for children. We do it for children, Mandy.
For children.
Very good. Hey, we'll see you next time on Growing Up in America here on Pacifica Radio.
Mark your calendar for Sunday, April 8th, when KPFT is throwing its birthday party at Heights Theater from 12 noon to 6 p.m. Get your tickets now at theheightstheater.com. Proceeds will benefit your community radio station. You'll hear the music of award-winning singer-songwriter Ruthie Foster with her soulful mix of blues, folk, rock, and gospel. Kevin Russell, the dynamic force of nature behind the group Shiny Ribs. Independent Texas songwriter Terry Hendricks with Lloyd Maines. Lisa Morales, who will sing beautiful lyrics in English and Spanish. The Peterson Brothers, who will bring you old school blues, soul, and funk. and local favorite folk family revival. Generation Radio will kick things off with a great set of world beats. Don't miss the KPFT birthday party Sunday, April 8th at the Heights Theater, 339 West 19th Street. To get your tickets, go to theheightstheater.com, or to reserve a VIP suite, call 713-526-4000, extension 314. KPFT Houston.
Get even more from your KPFT listening experience by checking out our HD3 stream. New and improved, get acquainted with our revamped weekly schedule now at kpft.org. Fear not, nationally syndicated favorites like Democracy Now!, Ralph Nader Radio Hour, Letters in Politics, and Economic Update remain. And good news, our evening schedule now features more local shows, including a stellar mix of public affairs, music, comedy, and Spanish language programming, created and produced right here at KPFT. Don't miss a second on HD3. Mouse on over to kpft.org or on TuneIn Radio today. KPFT.